Hi, and welcome to a responsible day for the 27th of Elul. My name is Gideon Rothstein, and I am presenting the Shiurim to you with the help of Rabbi Jacob Abramowitz, David Hachhauser, and the OU, to whom we thank for their cooperation, their assistance in putting the Shiurim online. Today we are going to learn from Rav Ben Sion Meir Chai Uziel. I always get never sure that I get that name right, but I think that's what it is. And Shut Piskei Uziel, the first chief Sephardi chief rabbi of the state of Israel. This is Shut Piskei Uziel Bishielo Tazman. He had response about contemporary questions. Simon Chavtet, response number 29, and it's dated the 27th of Elul of Tav Shin Chet of 1948. So it's early on in the history of the state of Israel. And the rabbi who wrote to him had been asked about a certain shul. A certain shul had along its some wall, let's say, 12 tzedakah boxes, whatever the 12 were for, but they had 12 tzedakah boxes. And one of the rabbis in that shul got this idea, and he wrote above them, above the tzedakah boxes, Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh v'shaveha b'tzedakah, that Zion will be redeemed with justice, and it returns with charity, with tzedakah. Meaning he's trying to imply, give tzedakah because it'll help return Tzion. And I don't think it's completely coincidental. It was soon after the establishment of the State of Israel, which is taken by many people to be a first step, at least, in the return to Zion, the way the Nevi'im, the way the prophets have promised this will eventually happen. So this man is saying, give tzedakah and it'll help out. That's what I think is going on. This rabbi was asked about whether it's good or not good to write psukim, because you might think that writing psukim and using psukim for these purposes has some downside to it, because it sort of turns the pasuk into a means to an end of getting people to think better about tzedakah and stuff like that. So that was the question. The rabbi who's writing to Rav Uziel says, he had a whole essay, and Rav Uziel says, you were mefalpel, and you did wisdom, and you were a masik lahalacha. You came to the halachic conclusion, based on the sources that you adduced, that according to all Rishonim and Achronim, you're not allowed to write a pasuk from Tanakh, unless there's some great need, the document, as we'll see later on in this tshuva, the document, one great for a chalitza. Chalitza, let's remember, is when a man passes away, sadly, without children, his widow is supposed to either marry, by Torah law it would be preferable to marry a brother of the man's. If they're not going to marry for whatever reason, then you do a ceremony called Chalitza, she spits in the shoe, and they are separated by that. So Chazal wrote out a get Chalitza, a document to verify the Chalitza, and there's a pasuk that was quoted in that document. So this rabbi who's writing to Rav Uziel says, comes to the conclusion that that was like a concession to absolute necessity. Or if you want to write out texts for students to learn, we're going to see that, I'll talk about that in a bit, the question of, let's say I have a kid, a 6th grader, a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old, today we print them, and we think that printing makes it less sanctified, but what do you do when you want a kid to be able to learn Chumash? They don't need to carry around a whole Sefer Torah. So can you write, this rabbi is saying, for the pressing need of elementary school students who need to learn how to read and learn Torah, so we let us write things that we ordinarily wouldn't. But other than that, we're not allowed to write psukim. So he's saying you shouldn't write psukim. And he asks Rav Uziel, Raviel's opinion. So Rav Uziel says, I read your ideas, your words, amadati matmiya, and I'm stunned. So why was he stunned? He says, I'm stunned because it's all the time that people write psukim. And it's a long-standing tradition of the Jewish people, v'chein nagum mishanim kadmoniyot, from ancient times until today, where the rabbis of various communities allow it, and they allow it in shuls. He says in the beautiful shul in Toledo, I'm not sure if he'd been to visit Toledo, and that's how he knew it, or how he knew about it, but the beautiful shul in Toledo that was built in 1357 by Don Shmuel Abulafia, he writes in Hebrew, Mizmor Pei and Tehillim, right? The 80th Mizmor of Tehillim, and they write it up there, and then they have a memorial plaque that they have there in memory of those who contributed to the financing of the shul, and they close there with a pasuk, La'amod L'Sharet B'Shem Hashem Uvahu Uvanav B'Chol Yisrael. The pasuk from Dvarim, the pasuk is really about a king. If the king handles his monarchy well and in a Torah way, then he and his descendants will have the merit of serving the Jewish people as their kings into the future. But the point is, a psukim are being written. Rav Uziel says, you look going to most shuls, most batei kneset, and among the Jewish people, they have psukim either written or sometimes engraved. They'll have Zahashar Lashem Tzadikim Yavovo, this is the gate of the Lord, and righteous will come in. They'll have Pitchu Sha'arim, they'll have Matovo Olecha Yaakov, right? They'll have it in every shul. You'll have Shiviti Hashem the Negdi Tamid in the front, that we should remember Hashem forever. You'll have that in many shuls, and now that you have many shuls, you have Dalif Nimi Atahomei, which is not a pasuk, but you have psukim in most, many, many shuls. V'chein v'shar sifrei hashut, if you have a book of responsa, so right in the frontispiece, in the front page, you'll have psukim there, right? Or books of drushos, right? If somebody publishes a book of drushos or a commentary on Tanakh, they'll have psukim there. So the Rabbi Uziel says, "Uzchurenish because you don't have mechtavim shel vad hasfaradim," that when you had letters that the Sephardi community, the official Sephardi community, would write to people, they would write on it, "Ashurei zechru mirachok ad Hashem, v'yushalayim ta'ale al libchem," that you'd be blessed if you remember from afar God and you keep Yerushalayim on your heart, which is a pasuk in Tanakh. And the Rishonim Letzion, let's remember that the office of Rishon Letzion, we talked today about Sephardi chief rabbis and Ashkenazi chief rabbis. Ashkenazi chief rabbi was a position that I believe started with Rav Kook, but Sephardic chief rabbi, as Rishon Letzion, which is the title given for it, and before that, I think the Chacham Bashi, went back into the Ottoman Empire for hundreds of years. So when he talks about Rishon Letzion, there's a long, long-standing tradition of Rishon Letzion in Eretz Israel, and they would have these letters would go out over this stationery, and the Rishon Letzion would sign on those letters, and they would never say anything. So the point Rav Uziel is making is that you've got groups and groups of Torah scholars who clearly thought that it was fine to write psukim, right? Mufusam lehatir. So then he says, see, even if it were to be true, let's say they all got it wrong. Let's say they all didn't notice a halacha, and the halacha turns out to be that really they shouldn't be doing it. Rav Uziel says, and this is, it's an idea I've seen before, and I think it's such an interesting idea to think about, and to, the parameters of which to ponder. Ein lanu rishut toriyit lahorot isur. We can't say it's usur. Because to say that it's usher, we would be motzi la'az al rabotenu ha-kodmonim. We would be denigrating them. We would say they didn't know what they were doing. They did something wrong. And that will cast into doubt other aspects of who they were and how they handled their Torah lives. So to say, they forgot this halacha. So that's a problem, says Rav Uziel. And you can know that from the Maharit. There's a Maharit where the Maharit writes to this community. If you have a minhag going back to your forefathers, I wouldn't have objected to whatever you're doing. Meaning, it's something they shouldn't do. If you had a minhag, I wouldn't have objected to it because you have a yated, you have a tent peg that you can rely upon. You have a basis because if your early rabbis permitted it for you, then I'm not going to stand in their way. Now, I think that this is obviously not the kind of thing that can be true without limitation, right? I don't think it's true that if we walked into a community and they said, "Our rabbis always let us." Whatever. I know, for example, people have said to me, "Our rabbis always let us mix swim," and they saw it happening and they didn't care. Or our rabbis let us, wheel baby carriages. Nobody ever said anything. Or shuls where there's a mechitza that the mechitza would seem to be way too low. I think, so the question of being motzi lazal rishonim is an important one that we're having here. And yet it seems to me there are times when you can say those earlier rabbis did not feel the ability to protest, or they didn't think it was the place to protest. There's all kind of, they're complicated questions. In this particular instance, Rav Uziel is giving examples not only where they didn't protest, but where they themselves participated in the activity. They wrote the psukim, or they signed papers with the psukim, and they never said anything about it. And therefore, he says that in general, when we come to see a custom that we think has a problem to it, so if it's a long-standing custom, which has had rabbinic approbation until now, that's a very, very rare that we would be allowed to protest to try to change it. So especially in terms of braiding psukim over the tzedakah boxes, and it's a very nice pasuk, and it reminds us of the importance of tzedakah, of charity, and of justice, and it tells us about the merits of the Jewish people and the coming close to the redemption, and it puts the act of giving tzedakah into such a beautiful religious context as it should. So how can you protest it? That's the first piece of Uziel's response. I don't know what you're doing. So you're exactly right. I still don't think you have the right to say what you're doing. Then he says, and I'm not saying all that only according to your perspective. But the truth is, when I look at the sources, I see it completely different for you. I don't think it's true that writing psukim is a problem the way that you do. I think that many of the important poskim, the important halakhic authorities, think there's no problem in writing psukim, as I'm about to explain to you. So the first topic he takes up is the question of Megillah Latinok Lit Lamed Ba. Gemara in Gittin talks about the question of, let's say, I have a kid who's coming to school, they want to learn Parshas Bereishis. So today, if you think about it, we give kids, small volumes of Sefer Bereishit because we can print it in a way that it's no problem to carry around all of Bereishit, let's say. But if you think about Gemaras, very often they will print out just a particular perek of Gemara because they don't want kids to have to carry on the whole Masechet because it can get heavy. You don't want to bother kids with carrying around the whole thing. In case and that's printed materials that we don't think have the exact same sanctity as written materials written in the original fashion. Those that have more sanctity, so you could easily imagine saying, you don't have to write that whole big thing for a child who's just learning how to read or learning how to study Torah. So the Gemara says, so then there's a whole discussion. So it seems like Ein Kotvin, and then we don't know why. And Rashi there explains, we don't read Megillah Parasha Levada Shel Torah Ushtaim. We don't write separate sections of Torah. So we'll get to why a little bit later. The first question is whether that's the only way to read it and what that means. But the implication of Rashi seems to be that the Gemara objects to writing a whole Parsha of the Torah. Because as I said, we don't write a Megillah Parasha. We don't write a whole Megillah, right? If you're not allowed to write even a Pasuk for anybody, for any purpose, for any reason, then when the question comes up, can you write a Megillah for a child to learn from? You'd say, what are you talking about, a Megillah? You can't write a Pasuk. How would you get to a Megillah? So it seems like for the fact that Rashi said the problem is a Megillah, writing a whole section of the Torah, it implies that writing only one Pasuk should be okay. And we'll get to why as we go along. But there's more reason to think that's true because there are other Gemaras. An example would be a Gemara in Gittin, where the Gemara tells a story about Bar Okva and Rabbi Elazar are having a correspondence about some halachic issue. It's not our halachic issue. But in the correspondence, every time Rabbi Elazar answers him, Rabbi Elazar says, the Gemara says, Sirtit v'chatav lo. Amar tishmar durachai v'chato is one part of it. And then he says, how do you know that you're not allowed to? Sirtit v'chatav lo. Sirtit means he made a line in the paper. And it happens when we read a Torah scroll, and a mezuzah, you have to make lines in the paper. That's part of the writing of a Torah scroll. So he would make a line in the paper and write parts of a pasuk. So the last one is Altismachi Shadal Gil Kamim. So that seems to imply that maybe you need your two lines. We'll get to that later in the responsum. But you're allowed to write it because he's writing parts of Psukim. It seems like you can write Psukim from Nevi'im. They just need your two. They need to have lines made in the paper as part of writing them properly. Many years ago, I happened to be with, and I don't know that he wants to be quoting him, so I'm not going to mention the name, but I happened to be with a Torah scholar, an important Torah scholar, and we were in a private home, however it happened, and there used to be these olive wood canisters that people would have for, let's say, a Megillah. You'd have an olive wood canister that you could put a Megillat Esther in, and on the canister, they wrote Psukim, or parts of Psukim. And this Torah scholar pointed out, he said, you know, and we're going to see if Rav Uziel agrees, but he says, I don't know that you're allowed to write those words, because if you write more than three words, we'll see the three words limit in this responsum as well. If you write more than three words, I think you need sirtut. I think you need to put a line in the paper, or on the olive wood, because they had written it b'ktav ashirit, in the same print and script as you write it in the Torah. It's not clear that the print matters in terms of sirtut. It might be that just writing a pasuk, or more than three words of a pasuk, requires sirtut. So we'll get to that again. So now, but main point is that the actual writing of the pasuk doesn't seem to be a problem as long as you were to have sirtut, you have the right line written it. We have another Gemara in Yevamah says that, Gittin, all of which show that the discussion of writing a piece of Torah for a school child is about writing a whole section. And we're going to talk about why a whole section should be a problem. It's about writing a whole section. But if you're not writing a whole section, if you're writing just a pasuk here and a pasuk there, it doesn't seem like the Gemara knows of any problem. As long as you do situr, as long as you put lines in the paper, which we'll get to. Now, then he says, in fact, though, while we just took Rashi for granted at face value that you can't write a whole section, when it comes to a whole section, you, in fact, look at other poskim. So he has a bunch of makarot that I'm not going to go through in the name of space, but it's good back and forth discussion. But he says, when it comes to the riff, people aren't sure what the riff meant. The riff seems very clearly to have said it's okay to write a whole section of the Torah for a tinok, for a school child to learn from. I have a kid, wants to learn brachos, he can carry around, we can write out a brachos for him, he can carry around brachos. But the question is, did the riff hold that way because of Eit lasot l'Hashem eifer Torah techa? There are times when we allow the abrogation of the Torah, and we say, because otherwise we have a problem here, such a significant problem that Torah cares about, that in some way we allow ourselves to violate the Torah, to break the Torah. That's one of the reasons, for example, why the oral law was eventually written down, because people were losing track of the oral law. they were forgetting it. So writing it down was seen as protecting the system from forgetting, and therefore it was allowed, even though it's really not allowed. So that's called Eit Lasot Lashem Hevei Torah Tech. That when there comes a time when to protect the Torah, to help the Torah, you might have to break the Torah. And so there are times when we have that, and that was one of the readings that people had of the Rif. So that would mean that the Rif agreed that the halakha really is you can't write a whole section of the Torah, but in the case of school children, because the need is so pressing, we allow writing the school children. Or, there's another reading of the Rif, that the Rif understood that Gemara that said you can't write a whole section of the Torah, only to be talking about a situation where it wasn't a place of mitzvah, where there wasn't a specific mitzvah to write down that section. So how did that fit in the Gemara and discussion? You'd have to look it up, and that's not where we're going to get into it. Ruzil gets to it a little bit, but we don't really have time to get into the backs and forth of that. That's in the Rif. So there's two ways of reading the Rif. It's a concession to necessity, but it's really a violation of the Torah, or it's not a violation of the Torah, because the prohibition against writing parts of Torah, all sections of Torah, is only shelo b'makom mitzvah, is only if there's not a specific mitzvah to do it. That's the Rif. When it comes to the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam paskins in the Mishnah Torah, lo yichtov megillah b'fnei atzma. We're not supposed to write a section of the Torah on its own. In the case of Mishnah, in the commentary there, says that he thinks the Rif and the Rambam agree that the Rif only meant to permit it when the man plans to finish up the whole Torah. Meaning, let's say I'm writing a Sefer Torah and I have a kid who needs to learn and I've written Breishis already. So I say, okay, fine, you learn Breishis for a while, and when you're done, I'll then write Shmos. And then when you learn, finish learning Shmos, so I mean to make him do a whole Torah. That was one way to read, another way to read the Rif. The Rif never meant you can write it on its own and just leave it that way. You can write it on its own and take a pause as you intend to fill it out and to eventually complete it. Tosus had another way of reading it. There was Rabbeinu Tam in the Riva in the name of Rabbeinu Eliyahu that Rav Uziel thinks also fits with Rashi, with the Rif and the Rambam, that the prohibition of writing a parsha, writing a section of the Torah, is only when he writes it to learn from and to be dorish, to really get into and delve into it. But if a man wants to write a letter, so this is what the Rabbeinu Tam writes, if a man wants to write a letter to his friend, and he just likes a pasuk, it says, it has a phrase that says exactly what he's thinking, and it's a beautiful thing to write using the Lashon HaMikra, so that you can write, not only can you write that piece of the pasuk in your letter, but you don't need Sir to even say Rabbeinu Tam. And that logic, what Vaziel says, would apply to a parsha shlema as well, to a whole section of the Torah, if the point of that section of the Torah is not to study it for the purposes of darshaning and learning Torah. If it was for some other reason, that you had a ceremonial scroll, there too he thinks you'd be allowed to write it without having to write a whole entire Sefer Torah. So this Rif and Rambam now, and this Rif and Tam, are going to be very strong backing for the idea that you can write things, and you can write pieces, and then certainly any even maybe larger pieces, if you have specific motivations or other motivations than the ones that would be a problem. I just wanted to point out that this whole idea of including psukim in one's writing is one that I don't know that we all do today, but that in rabbinic circles is very much done. If you think about it, if you've ever studied the Ramban's commentary on the Chumash, and if you haven't, you should, because it's a remarkable work. As it happens, I don't know when you're listening to this, but as it happens, I'm in the process of summarizing some of Ramban's ideas in Chumash, at least on Devarim, on a website called TorahMusings.com, and I do it weekly. I send out a piece of it, but the Ramban very blatantly includes phrases. I don't remember going back to count if there were three words or only three words or more than three words, but he includes phrases from Tanakh, and it was a style of writing called Militza, where you knew Tanakh so well that you managed to incorporate into your natural writing. It read almost like natural Hebrew writing, except you're just lifting phrases. Today we would say you're sort of turning into cliches, right? You're not thinking of your own, writing it your own way. But in fact, one of the beautiful forms of writing was to show your expertise in the Chumash such that Tanakh's phrases were floating around so well in your head, they became the stock phrases of your vocabulary and the way that you wrote. So the Rabbeinu Tam and the Tosfos here and the Rabbeinu Eliyahu are saying that that kind of writing doesn't require, not only is it allowed, it doesn't require Sirtut, it doesn't even require the lines, because the lines are only when you're writing it as Torah. But if you're writing it just as it's a phrase that you can use, then it doesn't require Sirtut. That's going to be very important for us when we get back to the tzedakah boxes, which we will get back to. There are tzedakah boxes out there waiting for our discussion, but we're still on the question of writing and not writing pieces of Torah, words, phrases, sentences, and whole sections. For whole sections, we've said some hold that as long as you thought to yourself you're going to finish it up, that's okay. Some hold that would allow it, and some hold that it might be okay on its own, and we're getting into that. So now, when it comes to, I'm sorry, not for a whole parsha, some hold the psukim would be okay. Then he says, you know, and I saw in this discussion, the Chasam Sofer wanted to explain why it is that you can't write a whole section of the Torah. And he says, the Chasam Sofer says, there are many things that we learn in Torah and Halacha from the connection between one parsha and the next. So if I write one parsha, I'm lifting it out of its context, and I'm therefore going to lose many of the important elements of how to understand that parsha, because the way the oral law and the way tradition understands this section, section A, is by relating it to section B or section C that are around it. And I'm losing that by writing it separately. That's the way the Chasam Sofer writes it. And it's not dissimilar, says Raziel, from what the Beit Shmuel, what the Beit Yosef had said about why we're not supposed to say Torah by heart. Why not supposed to read the Torah by heart? It's prohibited to read the Torah by heart. You have to read it out of the cloth, out of the Torah scroll. And the reason the Beit Yosef gave for that is the Ikamile Tuva Kagon Yiterot Vachaserot Okrivalochtiv. This is in Torah Chaim Simon Reish Nun Tet, chapter 259, where the Beit Yosef says there are lots of ideas that come out of the reading of Torah that are depend upon an extra letter or a missing letter, or things that we write in one way and read in another way, and those kinds of inferences and understandings are not going to be there if you're just saying it by heart. So it's a little odd, because if I'm listening to Kriya Satorah, I don't know what the Baal Kareh is saying or not saying, but I think the Beit Yosef is saying that at least the person reading it for everybody else needs to see the Torah in its fullest form. Even if it's pretty clear, he's not going to be thinking about all those things as he's reading it, but he needs to be confronting the text in its fullest form. That's what the Chasam Sofer was saying was true about why we can't write just one parsha, because this thing is one parsha. Each parsha exists in context with the surrounding parashiyot, and therefore, if you write just one parsha, you're robbing it of some of its meaning, the same way as if you say it by heart rather than reading it, you're robbing it of some of the richness of its meaning. That's the way the Chasam Sofer writes it. And then the Rav Uziel says, and I don't know what he's talking about. He doesn't say it quite like that. He says, "Ulodniyatati lo zachiti lahavin." I don't, which means it's a more humble way of saying, "And by poverty of thought, I have not merited to understand what's going on." Shim Kain, if that were true, he shouldn't be allowed to write any pasuk. Why shouldn't you write any pasuk? So Rav Uziel says, because the truth is, when we talk about being Dorish Smukim, about in drawing inferences from connections between parts of the Torah that are juxtaposed to each other, we primarily do it with verses that are next to verses. We do it sometimes with parashiyot the next to parashiyot. There are sections that are next to sections. But that's not the primary version of being Dorish Smukhin. The primary version of being Dorish Smukhin is that I have one verse next to another verse. And we say, look, the fact that the Torah put them near each other teaches us X or Y or Z. So if the Chasam Sofer's reasoning was correct as to why we're not supposed to write the Torah down in sections, then it should be true of Pesukim as well. But we've already said it doesn't seem like anybody has a problem with verses. People only have a problem with sections. And then he says, well, but maybe you'll tell me that on random verses, since we do it with sirtut, with drawing lines, maybe the lines remind us that this comes out of a larger document and is a reminder to go and consult the larger document when we're going to try to learn the Torah. He says, but if that's true, then that should be true of a section of the Torah as well. Just write it with sirtut. So he says he doesn't think the Chasam Sofer's reasoning holds water. And therefore, he thinks the reason by a Megillah Bodet about writing a section of the Torah is that we don't want to separate it, because the entire Torah is one Shira. It's one long song. And if I write it as a whole section on its own, then I'm separating from its song. And that would explain why, for example, the Tashbit says that if you're going to write it to learn it. But if you're writing it for some other reason, then you can write a section. Now, he doesn't say that why that helps with Psukim. I think he means that when you write a lone verse, everybody knows that you're missing part of the song, because the lone verse isn't a song at all. But a section can seem like a unit of song. Let's say, if I just read you the Shir of Hazinu, the song of Hazinu, you could say to yourself, that's a whole song. And he's saying, Fuziel is suggesting, that the reason, the problem is that since you get the impression that's a whole song of its own, you might not realize that even though each unit has some valid meaning on its own, it is embedded within a larger context of song that you can't do. So that's all the reasoning that he has that would suggest that you can write psukim on their own, except that there's a tshuva on the Rambam. A Rambam has a tshuva where he says you can't write psukim. meaning his whole reasoning to that has been you can write psukim as long as not a whole section because of all the inference. Because when you look for prohibitions, they don't talk about prohibitions to write sections. And yet, the Rambam has a tshuva where he says, no, you can't write whole psukim. You can't write more than three words, actually, which is what that Big Talmud Chacham told me all those years ago. You can only write three words and no more. The Rambam writes, and if you have some reason you have to write more than three words, you have to find a way, either change some of the words, change the writing, so you're not writing it as in the way that you'd write the Torah, or leave part of words, like, you know, abbreviate words, so they're not written as the full word, or skip a word, or skip some words, and that'll help, but never write more than three words in a row from a pasuk. And then another tshuva, he says, and also, you're not allowed to weave psukim into a talis, because that will lead them to be treated poorly. So that's a question still that you have today. You see people who weave them into a talis. He says you can't do that. So the Rambam seems to, in these tshuvot, say you can't have more than three words because that's like a whole section. And that when we talk about a section in the Gemara, we really didn't mean a section. We meant even Pesukim. Rashi made it very clear that a section is because it's a whole section. The Rambam seems to think, no, any more than three words would count as a section. And that led the Maharit to write that based on the Rambam, that you can't write lone Pesukim, and therefore you should be Machmir. That's what the Maharit. You should be Machmir to not write psukim. So that would seem to support the rabbi who wrote Rav Uziel. But then Rav Uziel says, but that tshuva, that responsum, is contradicted by the Rambam himself in the Mishnah Torah. Because the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah says, you write a get, which has pasuk in it, and you write ketuvat yevamim, you make a line, and you write a pasuk. And you write more than three words of the pasuk. So now again, the rabbi who wrote the letter to the Rav Uziel had said, apparently it said that he thought that's because you couldn't avoid in those situations. So you do it, but you're not supposed to accept where you can't avoid it. But Razil is saying it's clear that if you're writing more than three words and you need to, you put a seer to it, you put lines in the paper, and then you can. Right? So that's what it is. Now, I could have argued, well, which did the Rambam write first, the Mishnah Torah or the responsum? Maybe he wrote the responsum later and he changed his mind and whatever. Ruziel's not going to get into any of that. He's just saying that there's a contradiction. And since there's a contradiction, he thinks it's therefore clear that that's why, for example, Shulchan Aruch did not include this responsum in Shulchan Aruch, even though we assume that Rabbi Yosef Karo knew the Rambam's writings very, very well. He didn't include it. He wrote only the tshuva, the second tshuva. He said, halacha is, we don't weave psukim into the collars of a talis. This is in Siman Reish Pei Gimel, chapter 283, because of the problem of zilzul, that we're going to end up mistreating it. So apparently, we feel that Rambam, says Rav Uziel, apparently the Shulchan Aruch is by omission, telling us that we don't pass like that. Rambam, what we have as a halacha conclusion is, that the Rif and many who follow him have a prohibition against writing a whole section of the Torah. They allow writing it for a tinok lelamed. They write it for a tinok, for a child, to be able to learn, and that's because either there's a halacha like that, once it's for the child's learning, it's not the writing of Torah that was the problem, or because of Eilat Hashem, you have no other way, and you have to prevent the forgetting of Torah in the Jewish people. And the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch seem to think that even that's not allowed, and you have to find some other solution for the school child. But everybody seems to say, that if you're not writing it for the purpose of it being a Sefer Torah or having some kiddush of a Sefer Torah, you can write it. If you're not reading it to study it as a Sefer Torah, but let's say you're writing it to be a Yibam or a Chalitza document, or you're writing it for some kind of a decoration of some sort that's not going to have a problem of zilzit to it, like the shul or, you know, or a Torah institution, so that you should be allowed to do. So if that's the conclusion, then our tzedakah boxes should be okay, because we're not writing it to be a Sefer Torah. We're not writing it to have the sanctity of it, and therefore it should be allowed. And that's where Uziel was working his way towards. And that all the conclusion of all the Rishonim seems to be that if you're not writing it for the purposes of it being a Torah, and it's not a Parsha, it should be okay. What about Seer? So maybe you should have to draw a line on the page or on the wall where you're writing it, right? Amar Yitzchak Shtayim Kovin, you can write two words of the Gemara in Gittin, I'm pretty sure, that you can write two words without Seer Tut, according to Rashi, but more than two, you need Seer Tut. And then Tosos quotes this Rabbeinu Tam that we saw before. That's only true if you're writing it for the purpose of it being like in the Sefer Torah. But if you're writing a letter to a friend, that's what we saw before, and you want to use the phrase because it's a nice phrasing, that you're allowed to do Tosos held without Seer Tut. Yushami sounds like that's not true, that you do need Seer Tut. You do need to put lines on the paper even then. But Raziel says, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that when it comes to letters, personal letters, you're allowed to write a few words if you want to use the phrasing because it's a beautiful phrasing. And the reason why he gives is that you usually don't do that at the beginning of the letter. If you don't do it at the beginning of the letter, then the line above, meaning he's assuming, I think, that there's line paper that you're using just to write the letter. But he's saying that the line above the line you're writing could be like a sirtut, a top line above the writing you have. And then therefore that should be okay. If you have unlined paper, it's unclear what you do. And he says also he thinks that Reinu Tam is worthy of relying upon Lamaskana, that when you write words not for the purpose of being in a Sefer Torah, not for the purpose of studying them, and this would then suggest that at least according to Rav Uziel, if I'm putting parts of Psukim on a Megillah cover, a Megillah case, that same thing would be true. We would not need Sirtut, because the Shulchan Aruch paskened that in Igeret Shlomim, a letter was allowed to have parts of Psukim in it, or much of Psukim in it, and therefore it should be okay. So all of that is to point out to us that you're going to write Tziyon b'mishpat tipadeh, Zion will be redeemed with justice, v'shaveh ha'bitzakah, and those to return to it with charity, over the charity boxes. So it's not for a drasha, you're not doing it for learning purposes, you're not doing it for teaching Torah purposes. You're doing it to remind people of how wonderful it is to give tzedakah, and that's much more similar to including it in a letter, and therefore you have ample reason to think that you can write it, and you have attachments also said, if you're not reading it, writing it to learn from it, you can write it even when that's your toot, and you can write even more than three words, it seems like there's room to say that. And that is for Uziel on the 27th of Elul, telling us why and how shuls and other Torah institutions allow themselves to put parts of Psukim in decorative places without it being a problem at all. And finding ways to be malamed zchut, to find merit in the actions of the Jewish people. A wonderful lesson for the 27th of Elul, when we all need our merits, because Rosh Hashanah is right around the corner and our judgment is coming. So the more merits we can realize the Jewish people have, the better for all of us. Have a great day.